What a great testimony in song this morning. Well, you know that our theme for 2024 is together, and we are exploring various facets of that phenomenon, that reality, that desire for us as a church to be together. And our theme for the spring is together for God's glory, and we are exploring truths from the book of Exodus on Sunday mornings, on Wednesdays at the pastor's Bible study at noon every day. We are walking through Exodus just verse by verse, and so it's a much deeper dive, if you will, into the book of Exodus. If you'd like to participate in that, or you can actually catch it online. They're available on our church's website, Facebook page, whatever. Anyway, but here on Sunday mornings, just trying to hit some highlights along the way and learn some practical lessons from the book of Exodus. That's what we're trying to do on Sunday morning. So I've entitled the sermon today, From Bad to Worse. Do y'all know what that is? Have you ever had a time in your life where things went from bad to worse? There's a, we're going to look at Exodus 5 here in just a minute. There's a prominent social media site that asked the question of the people who actually publish things on this social media site. Would you send us in an experience of in your life where things went from bad to worse? Let me read to you one of the entries. This guy from Europe wrote this. He said, "My first week at white collar work, I find a parking spot where there is no parking signs. And there's a huge truck parked on the same road as well. I leave my car and go to work. 2 hours in, I realize I forgot my old school bag inside the car. I notify the supervisor that I'm getting out to get it. The car's 2 blocks away. Sure, but if something happens, call me so I'll know not to expect you," he said. "Okay, the car's just 2 blocks away. I'm gonna go there, get the bag, coming right back." So I go there and I find my car's back window smashed to pieces and my bag is gone. Inside the bag were art supplies worth about 50 euros, but most importantly, sketches and notes for the next 3 issues of my self-published comic book. I'm talking about a month of work, research, storyboards, dialogues, all gone. I call the police to report the incident when I notice something on my front window. There's an 80-euro illegal parking ticket. I look at the time. It was written 10 minutes before I arrived. I ask the locals, why would the police write me a ticket? They say, well, parking is forbidden here. But there's no sign saying that. Yes, there is right there, says a local, pointing at a no parking sign on a pole crushed by the truck that was parked beside me, and it's laying on the ground, and the truck is now gone from the scene. They said, by the way, the guys who broke your car window did it about 20 minutes ago. So I thought, I better call the cops now so they might find these people. So I called the police. They said they'd be there in 10 minutes. I called my work supervisor. He didn't answer. I called twice, 3 times, 4 times, 5 times. The line was busy. He never answered. Finally, the police showed up as I was continuing to try to contact my supervisor. I called 36 times. 20 minutes have now passed. They leave. They tell me they'll notify me when they find something. Parentheses, that was 2 years ago. I've never heard from them. I return to work devastated. My insurance is not good. I have to pay for the broken glass myself because of technicalities. I've lost 3 months of my life's work on the profession I chose but can't fully support me financially yet. And I get to lose about 50 euros worth of art supplies, and I get to pay 80 euros for a traffic ticket that I got unfairly. Then when I see my supervisor, who is furious, screaming at me, asking me where I've been for all these hours, I explained I've only been gone 35 minutes. I tried to call him about 50 times. My car was smashed. I had to wait for the police. He didn't answer the phone. I showed him the data on my phone, and he fired me. I pack my few things. I drive home. On the way, a taxi runs a red light and crashes into me. Ambulance, hospital, broken leg, 20 stitches. Well, at least I have insurance. I have to stay for at least one more day there. Meanwhile, I get a text message at midnight. My girlfriend breaks up with me and says I can't handle this relationship anymore. Midnight marks my birthday. So I doze off in the hospital bed. I wake up 3 hours later because an old man mistakes my room's door for his own, invades my unlocked room, screams at me at the top of his head to get out of his bed, tries to physically remove me. By the time the nurse gets there, I can't calm down enough to go back to sleep. So finally, it's my birthday, so I log into my Facebook. At least some birthday wishes from my friends might do something to my collapsed ego, only to find someone has hacked into my account, changed all the passwords, and 2 years later, I still haven't been able to access my Facebook account. From bad to worse. Ever happened to you? It's funny, isn't it, how sometimes things just start rolling down a hill, don't they? Well, I will say this. I don't know what Moses thought was going to happen when he made it to Egypt as God's emissary. But I do know what did happen. And so I want us to look at Exodus 5 today and see exactly what did happen when Moses finally made it to Egypt and had his meeting with Pharaoh. Look at Exodus 5, verse 1. Afterwards, Moses and Aaron went to Pharaoh. This is after Moses and Aaron had met with the elders of Israel. And they said, "This is what the Lord, the God of Israel, says. Let my people go, that they may hold a festival to me in the wilderness." Pharaoh said, "Who is the Lord? Who is Yahweh, that I should obey him and let Israel go? I do not know the Lord, and I will not let Israel go." Then they said, "The God of the Hebrews has met with us. Now let us take a 3-day journey in the wilderness to offer sacrifices to the Lord our God, or he may strike us with plagues or with the sword." But the king of Egypt said, "Moses and Aaron, why are you taking the people away from their labor? Get back to work, your work." Then Pharaoh said, "Look, the people of the land are now numerous, and you're stopping them from working." That same day, Pharaoh gave this order to the slave drivers and overseers in charge of the people. "You're to no longer supply the people with straw for making bricks. Let them go and gather their own straw, but require them to make the same number of bricks as before. Don't reduce the quota. They're lazy. That's why they're crying out, 'Let us go and sacrifice to our God.' Make the work harder for the people so they keep working and pay no attention to lies." Then the slave drivers and the overseers went out and said to the people, "This is what Pharaoh says. I will not give you any more straw. Go and get your own straw wherever you can find it, but your work will not be reduced at all." So the people scattered all over Egypt to gather stubble to use for straw, and the slave drivers kept pressing them, saying, "Complete the work required of you for each day, just as when you had straw." And Pharaoh's slave drivers beat the Israelite overseers they had appointed, demanding, "Why haven't you met your quota of bricks yesterday or today as before?" Then the Israelite overseers went and appealed to Pharaoh, "Why have you treated your servants this way? Your servants are given no straw, yet we're told, 'Make bricks.' Your servants are being beaten, but the fault is with your own people." Pharaoh said, "Lazy, that's what you are, lazy. That is why you keep saying, 'Let us go and sacrifice to the Lord.' Now get to work. You'll not be given any straw, yet you must produce your full quota of bricks." The Israelite overseers realized they were in trouble when they were told, "You're not to reduce the number of bricks required of you for each day." When they left Pharaoh, they found Moses and Aaron waiting to meet them, and they said, "May the Lord look on you and judge you. You've made us obnoxious to Pharaoh and his officials and have put a sword in their hand to kill us." So there is a story about things going from bad to worse. Like I said, I don't know what Moses and Aaron thought would happen. I'm not sure if they thought that even though God had told them that Pharaoh's heart would be hard, I'm not sure that they were prepared for what's happened now. As they've gotten there, made this appeal, obedient to God, and now this happens. You know, we live in a day when there are those who teach and preach what some people call the prosperity gospel. Do y'all know what I mean by that? You know, if you'll just follow Jesus, there will always be more money than month. Your children will always behave at the grocery store, right? And they will always say yes, sir, and no, sir, and yes, ma'am, and no, ma'am, on command. And the road will be smooth, and your life will just unfold in front of you as long as you're faithful to God. Well, you know, I hear that, and then I read my Bible, and I look at how my life has unfolded as I've tried to be faithful to God, and I've watched so many precious saints of God. And sometimes what we have to discover is that actually, following God is hard. Now, don't get me wrong. It's the best way. It's the way that leads to life. It's the path to the greatest fulfillment. But we have to realize that God has a very different perspective than we do, and he's created us for eternity, not just for this world. You just heard our choir sing about it. What happens when you can't see God's hand, perhaps? At least you don't think you can. Maybe you're not understanding his purpose and his plan. We still have to look beyond our circumstances and see him at work and trust him as our Father. Well, years ago, I was a young pastor in Tyler, Texas, and I was in a bookstore in Birmingham, Alabama, and I ran into a buddy of mine there. I was there visiting, and he just asked me, he said, "Wiles, have you seen this new book?" It's a Bible study book called Experiencing God. And I said, "No, never heard of it, know anything about it." And he said, "Man, you need to get it. You need to read it." And he and I went to seminary together, so we talked for a few minutes. So I went and bought one. And then he said this to me. He said, "But when you get it, don't read it by yourself. Get some people together and go through it with them." So I went back home to Tyler and got with a group of guys. And we started the journey in Experiencing God. That was 1990. And then Henry Blackaby, who's the author of Experiencing God, was leading an Experiencing God conference at First Baptist Church in Pittsburgh, Texas. Do y'all know Pittsburgh, Texas? Well, I was living in Tyler, so wasn't that far from us. So we went over and spent 2 days with Brother Henry. And y'all, I'll just have to tell you, it changed my life. Just listening to Brother Henry tell story after story, challenge us to look at what the Bible really teaches about following God, experiencing God, truly changed my life. I can't tell you how many times I have been through this particular study. It has shaped me. So this morning, what I want to do is offer you just a perspective that Brother Henry taught us in that two-day meeting, but it's also spelled out in his book, Experiencing God. Many of you have been through it. I think if I remember correctly, I think this is right. Before I came to be y'all's pastor, I said, right, Carrie, when Carrie was on the search committee, y'all did Experiencing God as a church right before I came here. So this 23 years ago now, or however long ago that was, 24 perhaps for you. But let me just remind you of some lessons that are found that I believe are just biblical lessons when it comes to learning how to follow the Lord, because that's really what this is all about. So let's start with this one, the invitation. When you read Exodus 3, God issued Moses an invitation. And I would say, just like Moses, God offers me and you to join him where he's working. He's inviting us to do that. If you go back and read Exodus 3, here's what God told Moses. "I'm going to rescue my people. I've heard their cry. It's in my ears. I'm going to bring them up out of Egypt. Now I want you to go, and I'm sending you to bring my people out of Egypt." He says later in Exodus 3, "I'm going to perform many wonders in Egypt, and you will actually plunder the Egyptians." Now here's Moses in Midian, working as a shepherd, and he's 40 years removed from his life in Egypt, and yet God shares with him, "Here's what I'm going to do." And Moses learns this lesson: God is already at work. And I just want to make sure that you and I understand that. Do you know that Jesus says that in John chapter 5, verse 17? Jesus says, "My Father is working, and I'm going to join him in his work." And so that's the path Jesus followed. He looked for where his Father was at work, and he joined his Father in that work. And when he saw God's hand at work, Jesus understood that to be an invitation from a human perspective. God is working in Egypt. He's getting things ready. He's going to deliver his people. He's already preparing for it. He then invites Moses to participate in it. And so you and I have that same kind of experience today, because God is at work today in our world. And what is God after when he invites us to participate with him where he's working? He is inviting us to a relationship with him. Because you see, that's what the Lord's designed us for. He has created you in his image so that you might relate to him, have a relationship with him, get to know him. It's not transactional like the prosperity gospel teaches. Do these two things, and then you get these three things. That's not how it works. That's not a relationship. That's some kind of contractual agreement. Is that how your marriage works? Okay, I'm going to do this, and I'm going to do this, and then guess what? Then you're going to do this and this. That's how this is going to go. Let's see how long that lasts. That's not a love relationship. That's some kind of a contractual agreement. We don't have a contractual agreement with God. We have a relationship with God. And God's inviting us to follow him. And here's what we're going to have to learn along the way. God is already working, and he's not necessarily looking for us to dream up something for him to do, which we're really good at. Believe it or not, his dreams are better than ours. His plans are bigger than ours. I can guarantee you Moses was not contemplating watching those sheep in Midian. He wasn't standing there thinking, you know, I think I'm going to go back and just deliver my people out of Egypt. And here's how I'm going to do it. No, that's the furthest thing from his mind. What was God contemplating? God was already working. God was already getting things ready. God was already preparing his people. And so God is at work in our world, and he's inviting us to join him just like he did Moses. Now, Henry Blackaby says, whenever that happens, it's going to cause a crisis of belief. I love that phrase, a crisis of belief. Do you really believe God? Here's what's got to take place once we get invited into the work of God. There has to be a period of adjustment. To me, this is one of the hardest things there is when it comes to following God. A period of adjustment. When God invites us to join him, we often must make adjustments to him so that we can obey him. Think about how this works, y'all. God calls Moses, invites him into this relationship so he can be used as an agent of redemption. Guess what Moses could not do if he was going to be obedient? He couldn't just stay in Midian. That would not work. He was going to have to make an adjustment. Adjust his life to God's will for his life. That's really the step before obedience. It's adjusting. It's recognizing that you can't just stay right here if God's inviting you to be a part of something. Abraham could not stay in Ur. He had to adjust his life. Can you imagine if Noah said, well, I'm actually building a new subdivision in my community right now. And so I'll get to the ark when I get time. Well, guess what? That was not the plan. He had to adjust his life so that he could be obedient. Gideon. Think about Gideon. It's one of my favorite characters in the Bible. Don't you think it's a great name for a baby, Gideon? I just love Gideon. But you know, Gideon was just working. You remember when Gideon shows up in the scripture, he's threshing wheat in a wine press. Y'all remember that? In other words, he's in a closed facility threshing wheat. Well, the way you thresh wheat in those days, you threw it up in the air so the wind could blow the chaff away. He's inside a cylinder so that the Midianites won't see him. And he's trying to thresh wheat with no wind. And God says, valiant warrior. Really, Gideon's like, you talking to me? Guess what? God issued an invitation. He had to make an adjustment in his life. He couldn't continue to live the way he was living. Do I need to go on? Matthew, what was Matthew doing when Jesus met him? Collecting taxes. Jesus said, I want you to follow me. James and John and Peter, Andrew, before they could obey God, they had to adjust their lives. But one of my favorite stories about that is Elisha. In 1 Kings 19, do y'all remember that God told Elijah that Elisha was going to be next in line? So he went and found Elisha. And I don't know really how this worked. You know, we've had a lot of people try to figure it out, but the mantle, the affirmation, the blessing of God that was on Elijah. You know, he took his coat, his cloak, and he threw it over Elisha. Y'all remember that story when he saw Elisha? He just threw it over him. That was basically Elijah's way of saying, you now are going to be the one who follows me. Elisha was farming that day, and he had 12 sets of oxen, and he was in the field working. And I love what 1 Kings 19 says. He tells Elijah, he says, okay, I get it. Let me go tell my mom and dad bye, and I'll follow you. Elijah says, okay. So that's what he does. He evidently goes and, I guess, tells his parents goodbye. Then you know what he did next? Just to make a statement, he killed all of his oxen. He took all the yokes and all the farm equipment that he was using, made a fire with it, cooked the oxen, fed everybody in the family and who worked for them, and left. In other words, Elisha said, I'm done with this part of my life. I'm going to make an adjustment here. You have to adjust before you can obey. I would submit to y'all that when God begins to invite us to his work and guide us, the adjustment period is really difficult. How about the rich young ruler? Jesus said, come follow me. Well, what was the adjustment he had to make? Y'all remember? What did Jesus tell him? Here's your adjustment. You got to adjust your relationship with your possessions. Right now, you're so caught up in your identity with what you have and who you are in that world. Here's what I need you to do. You need to adjust now to being in relationship with me. And I need you now to follow me. So here's your adjustment. Do what? Go sell everything. Give it to the poor. And the Bible says he just couldn't make that adjustment. Adjustments are hard. The adjustments that we have to make when we're invited to follow the Lord and obey him in an area of our life sometimes, it can be in our relationships, it can be in our attitudes, it can be in our perspective, it may be in our beliefs. The point is, God is working, God is inviting, God is calling, and we have to make adjustments. It can be hard. You know, when Cindy and I were in college and we were preparing for our future, and we were engaged and we knew we were going to be getting married, Cindy, our junior year, Cindy had applied to physical therapy school there at UAB, and she was the first alternate. So what that meant was she would be in, because there are always groups of people who get accepted into multiple schools, and they will take another one of those places of appointment. I was in the process of preparing for the MCAT. I was getting ready to go to medical school. I was with a group of guys. I was in a study group. I had been sponsored for medical school. So our plans were, I was going to go to med school, she was going to go to PT school, and this was going to be our life. But the Lord began to deal with us and invite us to a different kind of life. And what I didn't realize was, when we began this conversation, that Cindy had felt called to ministry as a little girl. We just never talked about it. And so we began to have this conversation about the calling to ministry. What was God calling us to do? Well, we had to make some adjustments. We had to decide that we were going to change our focus to finish up our education and then move to Fort Worth to go to seminary and begin a completely different journey so that we could ultimately be obedient. But it was really hard to make that adjustment. It was hard to have some of those conversations. It was hard to adjust my life. Well, adjustment can be really challenging. And sometimes it can feel very lonely, because not everybody understands the adjustment. I'm not sure what the conversations were like with all these that I just mentioned. Moses goes in to see Jethro. Jethro has been very patient with Moses, giving him his daughter, giving him a place to live, giving him a job. And Moses says, hey, here's the thing. I'm going to go take on Pharaoh and set Israel free. Good idea, Moses. I've been watching you, and I see that in you. What does Jethro say? How do you respond to something like that? Abraham tells Sarah, hey, we need to leave. Where are we going? I don't really know. You don't know? Mm-mm. Well, how will we know when we get there? I don't know. I just know God's telling us we need to go, and when we get there, we'll know. I mean, making these adjustments can be hard, because you may have people around you who are not necessarily applauding the adjustments. But the adjustment step, Henry Blackaby points this out in Experiencing God, and I believe it, is this necessary step before obedience. Sometimes we just want to skip to obedience, but we got to make adjustments first, and they can be really difficult. That does lead to obedience, because God is shaping us through our relationship with him, and obedience is to be our response to his invitation. That's just how it works. We are supposed to obey God. Moses struggled. You know, you've read Exodus 3, right, and 4. Moses is like, now, Lord, I'm not sure I can do this. Are you sure I'm the one? Maybe you need to send somebody else. But eventually, he's going to do what God tells him to do. And you know, y'all, obedience is a sure sign that you're accepting the seriousness of your relationship with God. Let me remind you, here's what John says in 1 John 2, verse 3, John says, we know that we've come to know him if we keep his commands. Whoever says, I know him, but does not do what he commands is a liar, and the truth is not in that person. But if anyone obeys his word, love for God is truly made complete in them. This is how we know we are in him. Whoever claims to live in him must live as Jesus did. In other words, the Apostle John says, here's a sure sign that you are in a relationship with God and you're desiring to know him. Aaron read that text from Philippians 3 this morning. I want to know Christ. Will we obey him? And obedience is difficult because the Bible says that we walk by sight, right? What does the Bible say? We walk by what? Faith, not by sight. That means we've got to trust God. We've got to live in relationship with God if we're going to honor God and how he's at work in our lives. And that leads me to the last thing that's connected to the from bad to worse. Obedience is costly sometimes. It's just not easy. I don't know where we got this idea that obedience to God is a guarantee to a life of comfort. It's just no guarantee to a life of comfort. Obedience to God can be very challenging, can be very difficult. Moses obeyed, he gets to Egypt, he does what God tells him to do, and then Pharaoh responds by saying, okay, I'll tell you what I'm gonna do. Y'all keep making your bricks, we won't give you any more straw, go get your own straw. By the way, you still gotta make the same number of bricks. Well, that was not, I'm sure, what Moses thought would happen. But here's what I would say about obedience. Even when it's costly, it honors God. Because God is at work in a much bigger way than we can ever imagine. And that means we may have to find our way through some hard circumstances that don't look very clear to us. Like I said, the choir just sang about it. We may not see things as clearly as we want, particularly when we're in the throes of obedience.